Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for having me. Just get the microphone right here. You guys are the hardcore folks showing up at 7:30 in the morning. And it's great to get an invitation. I've heard about this conference for a long time. It's a unique venue, and you guys should be congratulated for keeping it together and doing it as a community. It's an awesome thing. Chad Gonzalez asked me if I would talk about febrile UTI. It's sort of an area of controversy, and I think it's a good topic. And what I hope to do is sort of give you the executive summary. There's a lot of detail to the arguments, and do it in about 20 minutes and then see if you guys have some questions. And in going through it, I probably want to do three things. One is tell you where we've been in the past and sort of a little current as well, what the morphing or changing approach is, and then real briefly at the end about the future. So here's where we've been. And this is basically probably what some of you have in your brains as well. And I'm doing my best to be a learner here for healthcare transformation. So I think it's the learners that are actually obviously best set for the next decade. There's a lot of learning available to us now across everything we do. And it's the same in febrile UTI. So in the past, here's how it went. Febrile UTI basically equaled high risk for renal scar. Renal scar meant risk for hypertension, risk for renal insufficiency or failure, that was a worry. Reflux is common in children who have a febrile UTI, that's correct. If you evaluate all kids with a febrile UTI, somewhere between 35 and 50% will have reflux. All children with febrile UTI need an ultrasound and VCUG for initial evaluation. That's going to be a core of what we talk about today, but that's been the paradigm of the past. And we'll discuss pros and cons. Once you found reflux, the understanding was that reflux without UTI causes no renal damage. There's lots of data from the past that said prophylactic antibiotics would prevent new scars. So you could follow kids with reflux on prophylaxis safely. Also, low-grade reflux, once you found it, likely resolves. High-grade reflux does not. Again, antibiotic prophylaxis does prevent new scars, so you could wait on the low grades to resolve. And for the high grades, surgery might be needed, or for those that didn't resolve over time. So that's the paradigm of the past. So more recently, and we're going to go into a little detail, evidence has come up that antibiotic prophylaxis may not decrease the incidence of recurrent UTI. And so prophylaxis may not really prevent new renal scars. If this is true, and reflux is just a risk factor for UTI, which I'll talk about, then why should we test for reflux? So if prophylaxis doesn't help, why do you want to find low-grade reflux? There's arguments back and forth, but that's what's come into the pediatric literature recently. That's one of the two things. The other main thing is this, and it's surprising we didn't know this before, but when you evaluate a child with reflux, what we worry about is pyelonephritis causing renal scars. What you guys have read about is reflux nephropathy. So when we would see kids with a UTI and we would get an ultrasound or renal scan and see a scar, our assumption was that that was due to inflammation from infection. It turns out that with higher grade reflux, if you renal scan these children at birth, they already have defects that look like what we called renal scars in the past. They've had no infection. Some of these kids are a week or two old. It turns out that pathologically that's renal dysplasia, and it's associated with high-grade reflux. So now we've sort of flipped our understanding a little bit on its ear. Like what we thought were scars from UTI when we did the first scan may have been there from birth in some children. So that sort of caused us to rethink, are we really doing the right thing and making the right assumptions? So that's what's led those two things largely to the discussion. So this is reflux. That's bad reflux. And over the calyces there, often you'll find on renal scan areas of dysplasia in this kind of reflux, so grade 5, high-grade reflux. And that's what we're talking about. Again, high-grade reflux, and on the renal scan, in the upper pole of what's the right kidney, you'll see a little phonopenic area. Sorry, I'm not sure I'm going to figure out this pointer. Yeah, sorry, I got it. So this is a renal scar right here. We see decreased perfusion. And that's the kind of thing we're now saying, is that reflux and infection induced, or is that a congenital defect in the kidney? So that led to this, and that's what I'm going to sort of focus on today is three sets of guidelines about what you really need to do with the child with UTI. And I actually gave the AV guys a PDF file of each of these guidelines, so if the leadership wants to make them available to you, I mean, they're over there, they put them on the website or whatever they want. They're easy to find if you just Google under these acronyms for each group. So the NICE guidelines are the British Health Service. The NICE guidelines are essentially, at the end of the day, they say, do not get radiographic evaluation for any child with a first UTI. They are extremely sort of cost conscious, and they look at the outcome of those and the yield of those and have said, wait for a second or third UTI. I'll come back to that. The AAP guideline I'll focus on a little bit, and then the AUA guideline, which is the American Urologic Association. So those are the three that have sort of defined and guideline form what they think. So here's the AAP guideline committee consideration, and I'll give you a little bit of data on this, but six studies of children with UTI and reflux treated with prophylaxis or no prophylaxis. Their summation was the best available data, and they're not great, show that prophylaxis has no benefit except in grade 5 reflux, and that's a benefit in terms of preventing UTI and preventing new scar. And again, I'll give you a little detail on that. The authors, so one of my gripes about it a little bit is that the authors of the AAP committee guideline did not provide the same subset of data from these six study authors to the SOU, which is the urologic group, while they were writing their guidelines. So an interesting choice. So data was available to the AAP and not made available to the urologic group. So I'm going to talk about scars and UTI and why the guidelines are good or bad and what I think is the best approach. But there's a couple things I'm going to throw in that I think are important for you to hear. And these are action statements. There were 8 in the AAP guidelines. This one basically is action statement 3. To establish the diagnosis of UTI, clinicians should require both UA that suggests infection and a positive culture that's now been changed to 50,000 rather than the standard 100,000. And that's based on fairly solid data, so I think that's one you ought to know. And you always ought to confirm what cultures out with a UA that looks suspicious for UTI. That's an important correlation. And I would say that when we talk about whether or not to evaluate UTIs here, an extremely common thing we'll see is a child referred to us for evaluation of UTIs who actually has poorly documented UTIs. So really do your best to get non-bagged samples and document UTI well before you think about imaging. We looked at our data and it's probably 40% with UTI come to us with what's probably not adequate documentation. Action statement number 5, febrile infants with UTI should undergo renal and bladder ultrasonography. So this is the AAP position. This is the core of what I want you to understand. So all children with their first febrile UTI get this. Action statement 6A, VCUG should not be performed routinely after the first febrile UTI. So that's the change. That's the big paradigm shift. First UTI, febrile, get ultrasound. Wait for a second to get a VCUG. We'll come back to that a little bit and talk about value or concern. And then further evaluation should be conducted. That is, get a VCUG if there is recurrence of febrile UTI or there are other extenuating circumstances around the UTI. So here's my basic concerns and the concerns of urologists. I don't think the AAP is wrong in what they recommended, but here's the concerns about how they did it, is that in their own guidelines, they say bag specimens are not good, but 4 of the 6 studies they quote used bag specimens to document UTI. Those are often false positives, as you know. Circumcision status is not known in most of the studies. There's a huge effect on positive cultures, especially with bagged urines. Antibiotic compliance was not known. So this is kind of a key thing, is when you look at studies that say antibiotic prophylaxis doesn't help, what they're actually studying from most of these, because they don't confirm compliance, is that prescribing antibiotic prophylaxis may not help. If you look at the data, probably 70% of patients and families don't take it properly or at all. There's some pretty amazing data there. So that's practicality, but it may be the antibiotics aren't the issue, it's the compliance with them. Renal scarring is often only by ultrasound in these studies, and ultrasound is notoriously poor at documenting renal scarring. They left off data from the Swedish randomized controlled trial for reasons nobody understands. It was coming out around the time they convened their committee, but it was available to them. And very importantly, another take home is they didn't document bowel and bladder dysfunction, and I'm going to hit on that and show you a little bit about the Swedish trial. So further concerns. So if you look at the AP guidelines, you ask, so even if there's no or little benefit to many from antibiotic prophylaxis, it has been shown that surgical reflux resolution does protect against febrile UTI. And there's a distinct association with febrile UTI to renal scarring. So we got this disconnect in data about how you manage things. And again, I'll try to put those back together. Analyses of ultrasound-based approaches. So when you look at the NICE guidelines, and the people have been up to that for 7 years, and people at the US look at their data. So if we just did an ultrasound, didn't do a VCUG, how do we come out? What do we miss? The data coming out of those are increasingly unfavorable, that we miss important things early for small subgroups of patients. There's, I think, a group of patients where ultrasound only is appropriate and a group where they're not. And I think the guidelines may be written too broadly. And that's the, at the end, I'll sort of tell you what I think those things are and why. So here's a big worry. When you get ped urologists together and you really talk to us about what we think is important, we don't have huge headaches with the AAP guidelines, wait for a second UTI, except in some subgroups that I'll tell you. But here's the worry, is it an inappropriate message to pediatricians and family docs, primary care docs, that you don't need to worry much about UTI? And that's sort of a broad brush effect. You know, will primary care docs feel there if they order a VCUG in a specific patient they're worried about? Are they actually now practicing substandard or opposite guideline care? So it's an interesting thing. We worry about swinging the pendulum too far the other way. So on ultrasound, here's the things that you'll find if you work up a patient with febrile UTI. Obstruction in 1-5%, ureteral dilation, bladder wall changes, other pathology, or a renal parenchymal defect. It's about 15% total you'll find a problem. Those are the ones, if you get an ultrasound for febrile UTI, these would be the ones the AAP guidelines would say, also get a VCUG. Something's wrong with the ultrasound, get a VCUG and follow up. So about 15 or 20% is what you'll end up with for a VCUG rate if you do ultrasound only with first febrile UTI. Sorry. The problem with ultrasound is it's pretty crummy. 25% of the scars that you'd see on a renal scan, you actually see on a renal bladder ultrasound. So it's not good for scarring. So screening for scarring with ultrasound is low yield. So you're going to miss some scars. That's one problem. And then I'm going to skip this one quickly, but the AUA essentially looked at reflux in a whole set of different circumstances, and that's on the guideline that I left here. The AUA, American Urologic Association, has said that febrile UTI, essentially every child under 5 should have ultrasound and VCUG, and over 5, it can be ultrasound only with VCUG for the second UTI. So that's the difference between AAP and AUA. So let me go back and say, what's the data on is antibiotic prophylaxis useful? And here's where some of the controversy got generated. The blue boxes are antibiotic prophylaxis, and the yellow is no prophylaxis. And these are the basic studies that have been quoted in the PEDS literature. And they're all done in very different ways that we don't have time to go into, but they basically saw no difference. The Swedish study is the one that wasn't included by the AAP, although it was completed, and it's a prospective randomized trial, which did show a big difference. If you dig into all the detail, it turns out it's really low-grade reflux in most of the PED studies, the other five, and the Swedish study is high-grade. That's grade 3, 4, and 5. And so when you put all the data together, probably the high-grade refluxers can be helped by prophylaxis. So here's the Swedish study, randomized, and they had three limbs, prophylaxis, endoscopic treatment or deflux injection, and surveillance. On entry, the orange is high-grade renal scars. So for grade 3 reflux and grade 4 reflux, you can see there's more scars in the grade 4. That's where they started, and then they followed UTI rate and scarring over time. This is probably the most helpful data. And basically the green line, this is girls, and the green line is prophylaxis patients, and that's basically showing that girls who are on, I'm sorry, that's surveillance, no prophylaxis and no deflux injection. So they're followed with known reflux, high grade, off prophylaxis. They have more UTIs, more febrile UTIs. And they actually end up having more scars at the end of the 2-year period as well. Not a great number, a small number. But girls probably with high grade reflux do benefit from prophylaxis. So this is the breaking the data down to little smaller groups where you can find who benefits from surgical therapy or from prophylaxis. And that's kind of the point we are right now. Boys, there's no difference. With high-grade reflux, even the UTI rate in this study was no different on or off prophylaxis. Very interesting. I'm going to skip that one. So when you look at it, what patient factors actually predict high risk for future febrile UTI and scar? So you have a patient with a febrile UTI. Who's most likely to have another febrile UTI and get scarred from it? And those are the patients you probably want to think about either prophylaxis or getting a VCUG early. It turns out that, and these are the ones that I am concerned about in my clinical practice as well. So age less than 1 year, they're more likely to get a second scar, and their kidneys, which are still developing, are more likely to make it a permanent scar. So I lean towards under age 1, differently than the AAP guidelines, getting a VCUG in those patients, especially if they're white, where reflux is more common and scarring from UTI is more common. If there's any abnormality on the ultrasound that would suggest there might be reflux, I'm going to get the VCUG. And presence of a renal scar. So if on the initial ultrasound there's any scar, it turns out that that's a high indicator for potential of a second scar. It's probably a genetic predisposition to how you react to inflammation, but if you scar once, you're likely a scar from a second UTI. And then I look for bowel and bladder dysfunction. So these are the toilet train kids. This is a huge deal. This actually impacts all the morbidity from febrile UTI and reflux. If you've got the little kids that dance and hold and wet and they don't want to go to the bathroom and you ask them, do you need to go? And the answer is always no, even though they've got their underwear pulled up tight to their neck and they're dancing around. Those kids have bowel and bladder dysfunctions. They're at distinct risk for further UTIs because they colonize easily, persistence of their reflux, and they tend to have higher grade reflux. So in kids with febrile UTIs, looking for and treating bowel and bladder dysfunction is very important. And often, it's not paid attention to in studies that are done. It's been a classic problem. Those are the 5 grades of reflux and what they look like radiographically. That's to point out all reflux is not equal. So that's pretty obvious reflux to the right kidney. That's pretty non-obvious reflux. Tiny bit of contrast in the kidney here. So it's really different. When you say reflux, we're talking about a bunch of different things sort of molded together in terms of patient risk factors and the actual morphology of the reflux itself. So what is the prevalence of renal scars based on number of UTIs? So at your first UTI, you have somewhere between 5 and 10% chance of having a scar seen. This is probably an important take-home number, and it's sort of taken from a compilation of the literature, but the risk of waiting for a second UTI before you study is probably about a 5% risk of a new scar if you wait in the general patient with febrile UTIs. So not high, but somewhere in that 3 to 5% range when you look at all the data and the likelihood of scarring from a second febrile UTI. And so that's the trade-off. Is it worth getting VCUGs in everyone to prevent a 3 to 5%? That's where people have a lot of debate. Are there infants after febrile UTI who might be helped if reflux is recognized? So if we, instead of doing the AP guidelines, we continue to do what we used to do, how did that help? Well, if you found reflux, it did focus the parents in on there's a problem, don't blow it off if your kid has a febrile illness or urinary symptoms. You know, same for our doctor's offices. And then if you find reflux, if it's high grade, you could prophylax because those are the kids who are at the most risk for future scar and pyelo. And in the low grades, you definitely could avoid prophylaxis. It's clear that low grade kids without bowel and bladder dysfunction do pretty well off antibiotic prophylaxis. I've done that for 10 or 12 years based on old data before the AAP put their guidelines together. And I think that clearly makes sense for a subset. And then for the really bad ones who continue to get infected, you can consider intervention because you know the reflux is there. So here's the new working tenets, I would say, of UTI and reflux. Reflux is just one risk factor for UTI. There's bowel and bladder dysfunction and all the other demographic criteria that I listed there. Reflux does increase the risk of UTI being febrile and or scar formation after UTI. In urology, the one correct answer on the board is, what does reflux, or what does resolution of reflux do for a patient? It decreases their chance of any UTI becoming a febrile UTI because there's not ready access to the upper tracts. It's a little harder to make definitive statements on other aspects of reflux and resolution, but that one's clear. Again, many patients have congenital renal lesions that are most common in high-grade reflux. Those are the scars that we used to think were reflux nephropathy, but are not. Resolution of reflux does decrease pilo rates. That's that board question I just told you about. Many children with reflux are not predisposed to further UTI or scar. These are the slightly older kids, one UTI, no bowel and bladder dysfunction. You should know that African American children have about a tenth the rate of reflux as Caucasians. So in African American kids, the threat or concern of reflux should be a lot less right off the bat. Those kids, again, not sure they need a VCUG. So what are the risks of the wait for two approach? Like, wait for the second febrile UTI to get a VCUG. In the overall population, to reiterate, it's about a 5%, 3 to 5% increase in scar rate. Probably higher in the select high-risk cohort, the ones we talked about, high-grade reflux, young kids. Some may wait for more than two. Again, that's our worry, is that if you say you don't have to get a VCUG early, are the family and are the primary care docs going to say, well, let's just wait a little longer, and gets to be three or four or five, and then you end up with a 40% risk of renal scar when they get diagnosed instead of a 10 to 20% risk. And very interestingly about the AAP, this is a very unusual move. I half approve and half disapprove. So they set guidelines based not on a positive trial. They didn't study the wait for second UTI approach and say, here's our data on it. They sort of looked at a compilation of studies about the lack of benefit of prophylaxis and this and that. Some of the data is very debatable, which I told you. But they basically set guidelines without a trial that proves this is the correct way. And that's something we need, is a wait for two trial, if you will, and there's several places that are undertaking that. So I think the AAP had an agenda, and they threw their hat over the fence and said, we want fewer VCUGs. They may be right, and they may be proven to be right, but it's an unusual move. And for certain select kids, those high-risk kids, I still think they may proven to be incorrect. What are the risks of the old approach, like a VCUG with every first UTI? Well, there's the morbidity of the study, pain, radiation cost, and then we overtreat. You know, if we're finding low-grade reflux, there's dim bulb urologists out there, sorry, who are going to do reimplants on kids who don't need it. They're not, like, tuned into the data and who benefits and who doesn't, so overtreating is a distinct risk. And the truth is likely somewhere in between, like all these arguments we have. And I think what we need is a finer comb. We need to sort out who's high risk, who's medium, who's low, and we're working on those things. But it's not perfect, and there's not great data to prove them all. So here's basically the idea. And the management, and my management is essentially this, is that I look at a grid, and there's probably two or three other things on here, which include likelihood of parental compliance, how far away they live from, you know, good care. In our regions, that's an important thing. But do they have bowel and bladder dysfunction? If they do, they're at a higher risk for febrile UTI and scar. You can see younger kids, the same thing. You can shift the little diamond back and forth and create a risk profile. And there's not perfect definitions of, you know, you add it up, and if it's 53 points, you put them on prophylaxis, and if it's 52, you don't. But this is the idea of how you sort patients. This is what we try to do. If your patients come to our clinic, is figure out what their risk is. And that, at the end of the day, that is kind of what we're up to. There's clearly, again, toilet-trained kids, both boys and girls, with lower-grade reflux and only a single UTI, who you can safely watch off prophylaxis. If you have those kids, if you confirm that their bladder control is good without leaking, dancing, posturing, no bad constipation, take them off prophylaxis and see how they do. So these are grade 1 and 2 reflux, maybe even grade 3. I wouldn't do it in the higher grade reflux. That's where probably urologic consultation makes sense in terms of making best decisions. So, you know, we don't need to hide under the guidelines and not think about it ourselves and sort of be timid about our opinions and what we think is right and wrong. So we need to look at it ourselves prospectively. Let me give you a really quick heads up on a couple things. So you don't have to read all this stuff here, but this is one to watch for. This is the RIVER study, which is an NIH multi-institutional study of prophylaxis for medium-grade reflux versus no prophylaxis. 600 patients watched for 2 years. This may answer a lot of the inadequacies from the other studies, and it should be out in the next year. All the patients are enrolled, and they're just in follow-up. So watch for the RIVER trial. And then here's a couple other interesting things. You may see these in pediatrics and other journals, but really cool, interesting stuff. So rapid UTI detection. Turns out you may be able to diagnose what bug is causing the infection within an hour with basically RNA-specific dip tests. And so you can get a patient in, dip it, and say, that's a Klebsiella, that's an E. coli. You'll know the resistance pattern. You can choose better. So this is an interesting thing that I sort of didn't tell you. It turns out that if you diagnose and treat a febrile UTI super promptly, like within 4 to 6 hours, the risk of renal scar is close to zero. That's really hard to do. It's really hard to trust your patients and, you know they'll be good enough observers to do that. But that's an interesting thing. If we could do it super quickly and super accurately, we'd be in good shape. Also, the urinary proteome. So people are looking for things in the urine that indicate whether there's been renal injury, pyelonephritis, and the likelihood of further problems. So look for that as well. Procalcitonin is one of the things that's really being publicized. So thanks for your attention. I probably have 1 minute for questions. I went a little longer than expected, but thanks for inviting me as well.